You all doing?
I do this every time, you should know by now.
How are we all? Are we all good?
Yes.
This beautiful end of summer's day. A beautiful day, isn't it? Right, okay. So, as Pete said, I'm going to continue the series that we're now into our third week on, which is looking at the Gospel of Mark, the book of Mark. If you haven't got a Bible and you'd like to have one, there's two at the back at least. I'm going to have the verses on the board anyway, but I think sometimes it's good to be able to look up stuff in the Bible as well. So I'll give one there. Who wants a Bible? Going once, going twice. Okay. So, we're looking at this book of Mark, one of the four Gospels in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And 2 weeks ago, Alan introduced us to this book, and he told us about the author, who actually is a guy called Peter, not a guy called Mark. Peter dictated the book to Mark, who wrote the book. So we hear about Peter, and we hear about this guy called Mark. And the first thing, of course, is to realize that these books were actually written by real people. We believe they were inspired by God, but the books of the Bible written by real men and women, okay? And we learn an interesting fact that actually Peter and Mark were real action-focused, action-oriented men. So when you look at the book of Mark as opposed to some of the other books in the Gospels, Matthew, Luke, and John, actually Mark is full of what Jesus did. He doesn't focus a lot on other things, but it's all about Jesus did this, Jesus did that, Jesus did that. He was very action-focused, and what he wanted us to do was look at the stories of Jesus and say, why did Jesus do that and what did that mean? So that's what we've been looking at. And last week, Pete started us looking at some of the miracles that Jesus did and what those actions meant. And we're going to continue that today. We're going to look at four specific miracles in the books of Mark 4 and Mark 5. If you've got your Bibles, we're going to turn to page 708 in the church Bibles. That should be Mark chapter 4, if I got it right. And if I also get this right, if I press this, by the miracle of technology. Oh, well, something happened. What the heck happened there, Alan? Did you click on the slide? Miracles of technology. Click on that slide and then we should be there. Right, hey, right. Okay, so we're going to start by looking at the story of Jesus calming the storm in Mark 4, 35 to 41. And we read this. That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, let us go over to the other side. So they were on one side of the Sea of Galilee, and Jesus said, let's go over to the other side. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. I love that. The disciples woke him and said to him, teacher, don't you care if we drown? He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. And he said this to disciples, how odd. He said, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? They were terrified, so they were seriously afraid. And they asked each other, but now maybe they were afraid about something else. Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. So that's the first we're going to look at. And we're going to take, you know, I could spend the whole time just looking at these verses, and we could take one miracle and delve into it and go really deep. But what I want to do is go over the four fairly quickly, because I want you to get a big picture view. For those of us who are in the midweek Bible groups at the moment, we're doing that big picture view of the Bible. And this is a big picture view of who Jesus is. So we're going to look at the four miracles fairly quickly, but the four together will give us a bigger picture of who Jesus is. Okay? So we've learnt already when we start to look at Jesus in the Bible that actually everything that goes on, every incident, every event tells a story. It tells a story about Jesus. It tells us about him. It tells us about who he is. And it also tells us something about who we're supposed to be too. So we're going to ask those three questions. What does it tell us about Jesus? What does it tell us about who he is? And what does it tell us about how we're meant to be as we look at these three? So firstly, says, all being well. Can you go down for me, Alan? Yeah, go on. Just click on the slide. Right, yeah, keep going. Two more clicks. Right, and again, one more. So, firstly, what does this tell us about what Jesus was like? Well, if you noticed, it tells us crowds followed him, right? It says, let us go over to the other side, leaving the crowd behind. So crowds followed him. He was somebody to whom people were attracted. He attracted them in large numbers, it appears. He also cared, right? It says there that the disciples said to him, teacher, don't you care? And in response to that, he showed them he clearly did, right? He was a man of compassion. He saw their need, and he was willing to meet their need right there in the boat. I guess it also tells us he slept. You know, that picture, Jesus was asleep in the back of the boat on a cushion. You know, it tells us that Jesus needed sleep, right? And most of all, it tells us the wind and the waves obeyed him. The disciples said, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. So what does it tell us about who Jesus was or is? Well, it tells us actually, I think, first of all, he was a human being in some respects. He needed sleep, right? He slept like the rest of us. He walked around on this earth. He met with the disciples. He met with crowds. He was human. But actually, I think it also tells us, actually, he was way more than human. The disciples said it. Who is this that the wind and waves obey him? And you know what? I believe that there's only one person who is capable of dictating to the wind and the waves and the storm, and that's the one who created the wind. It's the one who created the waves. Only the one who created them can have authority over them. Jesus was the creator who created all this, and therefore he could speak, and the wind and the waves obeyed him. You see, Jesus was saying in a fairly dramatic but actually fairly calm way, I have that authority. I am God, and here's the evidence that I am who I say I am. Okay, if you click again, thank you. And what does this tell us about who we are meant to be? Well, Jesus says, why are you so afraid? Don't be afraid. So there's a clue in there that actually he doesn't want us to be afraid. And he actually says, do you still have no faith? Second clue is actually we're to have faith. Faith in whom? Well, we'll come to that in a minute, we'll see. So that's the first miracle. Let's go on to the second one. So the second one we're going to look at is one that you may very well know well. This is the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 in Mark 6. It follows on from what we just talked about. It says, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, aha, there's that again, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, they said, and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered, you give them something to eat. They said to him, that would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it them to eat? How many loaves do you have? He asked. Go and see. When they found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. And this is the Mark bit. In the other Gospels, it talks about them going and finding a young boy who gave them loaves and the fishes. Mark doesn't bother telling that because actually he's getting on to the action and what's going on, right? Then Jesus told them to make all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, looking up to heaven. He gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 baskets of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. Talk about a food bank. That's one way of doing a food bank, isn't it? 5 loaves and 2 fishes and 5,000 people fed and 12 basketfuls left over. Okay, so same questions again. What does that tell us about who Jesus was, or what Jesus was like? And they'll come up any second now. Go on. Well, again, crowds followed him. 5,000 people, we're told this time, right? He had compassion and he saw their needs. First note of compassion, if you note in this, it says he had compassion on them. Why? Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. You see, Jesus saw what others don't see. First of all, before he saw the physical hunger, he saw there was a spiritual hunger, a spiritual need. And he cared enough to do something about it. He recognized that we all needed rest again. If you noticed at the beginning, he said, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So he knows we need rest, but he can do the impossible, right? I've never seen anyone take 5 loaves and 2 fishes or even half a curry and feed 5,000 people with it. I don't know whether you have, but he can do the impossible. And he backs up who he says he is with what he does. He doesn't just walk to talk the talk, he walks the walk. And notice when Jesus moves, he moves in abundance. There wasn't just enough for the 5,000, there was 12 baskets left over. So what does that tell us about him? Well, it tells us that he understands our human frailties. He knows we need rest, he knows we need to eat. But if you notice, he also knows that spiritually we need a shepherd. Remember, he said he saw them and had compassion because they were like a sheep without a shepherd. He has authority over the impossible. Again, he backed up who he claimed to be with his actions. And I don't know about you, but again, to me, there's a man who started, you know, with 5 loaves, 2 fishes, and backed up what he said. Again, he's saying, I've got authority over these things. I am God. Here is the evidence. So what can we learn from that? Well, we're meant to have compassion as well. We're meant to see the need, just as Jesus sees the need. We're meant to act on that too. And then, good point, we can work together with Jesus to do the impossible. Yes, folks, even today, we can work with Jesus, just as the disciples did. Because if you notice, in this story, the disciples worked with him. Jesus didn't go and find the loaves and the fishes. He sent his disciples to go find the food, the ingredients for the miracle, if you like. And together, they solved the problem. They met the need. And that's very much the picture of the church today, working hand in hand with Christ to meet needs. That's the story here. Okay, so let's go on. We'll keep going. We're rattling through these. Next one, Alan, please. Jesus walks on the water, Mark 6, 45-46. So this follows on straight away, straight after this miracle of feeding the 5,000. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd, right? After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." We've heard that one before, haven't we? Then he climbed into the boat with them and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. So let's look at those three questions again. And again, Alan, please. So, first thing we notice is Jesus took time to pray. We read there about after leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. So if Jesus took time to pray, probably it's a good idea for us to take time to pray too, don't you think? He saw the disciples straining. It said, later that night, when he was alone on land, he saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. So he notices when we're struggling and when we're having difficulties. Say that again. He notices when we're struggling and having difficulties. And then what? He responds when we cry out. If you read that again, you'll notice there's this strange statement which says Jesus was going to pass by them. He saw them straining, but he was still going to pass by until what? Until they cried out. And when they cried out, he came to them. Okay? So what does that tell us about Jesus? Well, it seems to tell me that the natural laws don't seem to apply to him. I know I personally can't go out and walk on Roath Lake. I'm not even going to attempt to try it. But for Jesus, that just seemed to be, you know, a stroll across the lake to meet the disciples on the other side. And nature seems to obey him. So again, what is Jesus illustrating here? Well, he's illustrating that he has authority over the natural laws of this world. Why? Because he was part of the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, who spoke this world into creation. So therefore, he has authority over it. What does this tell us about how we're meant to be? Well, it tells us we can cry out to Jesus when we need help. And surprise, surprise, again, it tells us we do not need to be afraid. Okay, we'll keep going. You should be getting a picture starting to build up here. Last one. Raising Jairus' daughter, Mark 5:21 to 43. When Jesus again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered round him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter's dying." I mean, what a heartbreaking thing to have to say. "Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. Now there's a dot, 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 because then there's another story, which I won't go into now, but this just shows you Jesus having compassion on a lady, and you can read that story in between, and that just shows how Jesus, in the midst of one request, can take time out. He doesn't dismiss this lady, etc. So he deals with this lady and heals her miraculously, and then moves on. The story moves back again. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. "Your daughter's dead. Why bother the teacher anymore?" Now, some could say she's died because he's taken time out to meet this other woman's need. I don't know. But meanwhile, the daughter died. Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, "Don't be afraid." There it is again. "Just believe." Easy for you to say, Jesus. He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing?" He said, "The child is not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk. She was 12 years old. I like that, just putting that in. She was 12 years old. At this time they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Now there's loads we can go into there, but I want the big picture view again, so let's keep going. So again, what does that tell us about what Jesus was like? There's the crowd statement again, right? It also tells you he was approachable. In the midst of all this stuff going on with the crowds, this guy, whose heart was obviously breaking for his daughter, was able to approach Jesus, and Jesus had compassion upon him. He responds, he clearly responds when people cry out, and if you read the story of the lady in between, he responded to her as well. What does this tell us about Jesus? Well, if you haven't spotted it already, it tells us that he has authority over death itself. Dead silence there. He has authority over. I think that is so good that if you enter again. Yep. I put it right. I mean, boy, if you want to spend some time, just have a think about what that means to us today. He has authority over death itself, right? Just think of the implications for us of that. What does this tell us about how we're meant to be? We can be bold in coming to Jesus with our requests. We don't need to be afraid. There it is again. And Jesus just says, just believe. So who we're believing in, who we're putting our faith in, well, we're putting our belief and our faith in this person, Jesus, right? That's what this is about. So we're going to wrap up with some lessons we can take away from today. So just hold that now there, Alan. So I hope you've got a bit of a big picture there in terms of this person, Jesus. You know, it's no coincidence we're looking at this man, Jesus. If you've noticed, a lot of what we've been doing today is about this person, Jesus. Pete started us with looking at who God is and the things that we know about God. And you may have noticed, remarkably, that those things that we said were about God, Jesus exhibits too, right? And at the beginning of the book of Mark, it tells us that this book, the beginning of the gospel, is about Jesus Christ. And Mark says very boldly up front that he is the Son of God. And if you're here today and you're not sure who this person Jesus is or what he's about, then I give you two things to think about. The first is see whether his actions, the stuff we've just shown briefly here today, see whether those actions are backed up, that back up his words. Mark says he's the Son of God. Do we see that illustrated in what Jesus does? He claims to be the Son of God. Do those actions back up this claim? Does he, like Pete said last week, do what it says on the tin? I suggest to you, if you want to know about Jesus, go and truly examine whether this man was who he claims to be. Because I believe and I know that when you examine that, his claims for who he is will be backed up by his actions. And if you want to know more, we're running an Alpha course, which is an opportunity to explore more about who Jesus is. And that course is starting the end of this month. And we can tell you more afterwards. Anne can tell you more about Alpha. And if you want to go on that and learn more about that, there's ladies here who've been on the Alpha course and loved it, right, ladies? Yeah, they said yes. Believe me, they said yes. So that's the first thing. The second thing is look at Jesus' compassion. Jesus saw the need and responded specifically to it. He was truly compassionate. You know, did any of you watch Avatar? At least one person watched Avatar. There was a phrase in Avatar that they used with the natives that said, "I see you." Do you remember that? And they said, when they were learning to work with the natives, they said, "I see you" doesn't mean "I see you, Maria," or "I see you." It means "I see you, I can know you, I see you, I really see you." And that was Jesus. He saw people's need. He didn't just see them walking around. He saw real needs and responded to them. And if you think today that we've got a God in this world who is completely disconnected from the world, who's separated from us and isn't interested, that's not the God I see in Jesus. Jesus says, if anyone's seen the Father, anyone's seen me, sorry, then they've seen the Father. And he says, I only do what I see the Father doing. So if you want to know what God is like, look at this man Jesus, and you'll see a man full of compassion and a man full of love. So my question to you today, what is your response when you see a God who looks like this? Okay, so lessons for those of us who do know him and say we're followers of him, and with this I'm going to wrap up. Well, two things just briefly as we finish. You know, sometimes as Christians we can get someone embarrassed and say, well, you know, when we talk to people about church and about church things, it holds no attraction for people anymore. No one's interested in church anymore. Well, you know, that might be true, but it depends what you mean by church. But actually, what we're not about is introducing people to church. Let me say it again, just in case you didn't hear that right. We're not about introducing people to church. We're about introducing people to Jesus. Because Jesus is the same yesterday and today and forever. And when people meet Jesus, not the church in all its good forms, and sadly sometimes its bad forms, but when people meet Jesus, there is an attraction there. The crowds followed him everywhere, right? So that's the first thought. The second is, don't be afraid. You see, the disciples got to learn that they didn't need to be afraid because Jesus was with them. That's why they were so scared when Jesus said, I'm going away. That's why they were so scared, because they'd learned that while Jesus was here, we're okay. And they had to learn the lesson that actually, although Jesus was physically going, he was going to be with us by his Spirit. And you know, folks, the miracle maker's with us today. The one who loves us so much that he gave his life for us is with us today. And in 1 John 4:18 we read, there's no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. Right? So we don't need to be afraid. And I want to finish with a story for you. Because, as I said, it's not about church. We're not here to do church. We're not here today because we love church. We're here today because we love Jesus. We come to church because when we love Jesus, we want to come and meet together and worship him, but we're not here because of church. We're here to worship this man called Jesus, who was the Son of God. And you know, when people meet Jesus, even today, just as we read in the Bible, lives change. I'm going to read you a testimony that Bidge sent round to a number of us on Friday. This is a testimony from a guy who was a drug addict in South Wales. In fact, there was him and a mate who were both major drug addicts. And this is a poem he wrote in response to what Jesus has done for him. And I'll just read it to you. Last week I went to Newport, my bail I had to sign, and it brought back bitter memories of a far, far better time. I had lunch at McDonald's where I sat alone in my chair, but I could hardly eat a mouthful because you was not there. I strolled along to Primark to see what clothes to buy, but shadows of you everywhere brought tears to my eyes. So I staggered to the bus stop and caught the bus alone, back to the dour, dreary lodgings that had become my home. The doctor gave me tablets, as if they could heal my heart. No, nothing can fill the emptiness of us being apart. The tablets numb my feelings, for love is what I lack. Instead, there's cheap white cider, tamazepam and smack. For 6 whole years, I wallowed in grief and self-pity until I met Lord Jesus, who truly set me free. The love he gives is real, unlike the thing we knew. And once the seed was planted, it grew and grew. He took my shame and sorrow. He made them his very own. He bore the burden to Calvary, where he suffered and died alone. And he finishes it with, "Thank you, Jesus." And that's a real guy here in South Wales today who's met and found out for himself that this man we've been looking at today is real and changes his life. And we're going to finish with a song in a second that was that last part of his poem. So as I conclude, I just want to say that, you know, we've got a man here who's with us today that changes people's lives, and that's what we're about as a church. Folks, if you want to know what we're about as a church, it is about introducing to people to Jesus. You see, because when people meet Jesus, marriages are mended, relationships are restored, the hungry are fed, fears are forgotten, addictions are broken, sins are forgiven, and people are reborn. I'm going to say that again. When people meet Jesus, marriages are mended, relationships are restored, the hungry are fed, fears are forgotten, addictions are broken, sins are forgiven, and people are reborn. You see, this is not an academic presentation. We're here as a church not to be academic, but we're here to be a practical demonstration of what Jesus told his disciples to do, to go into the world and tell the world that the kingdom of God was near, and when the kingdom comes into people's lives, that's what happens. Folks, this is our Jesus. This is the God that we worship. This is the God that we serve, and we have good news for those who don't know him. Let's stand together, and we're going to finish with a song that is just a wonderful song, which says, "I stand amazed in the presence of Jesus the Nazarene," this man we've been talking about today. Let's stand together and worship him.